The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the July-August 2023 issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to go to Who's Who in Sports, our third line. And we have Matthew Tkachuk, Florida Panthers forward. His height is 6'2", his weight is 201 pounds. He was born December 11, 1997 in his hometown, Scottsdale, Arizona. In his first season with the Panthers, Tkachuk scored 40 regular season goals and then added four more in the Eastern Conference Finals, including three game winners as Florida swept the Hurricanes. Tkachuk was named the MVP of the 2023 All-Star Game after scoring four goals and adding three assists. Tkachuk's father, Keith, played 18 NHL seasons and was the fourth United States-born player to score at least 500 career goals. Next, we have Caleb Williams, USC Trojans quarterback. His height is 6'1". His weight is 220 pounds. He was born November 18, 2001, his hometown, Washington, D.C. Williams threw for a school record 4,537 yards and 42 touchdowns, leading the Trojans to an 11-3 record. He was named Heisman Trophy winner. In 2021, Williams spent his freshman season at Oklahoma, where he became the starter halfway through the season and won five of his seven starts. But did you know USC has won seven Heisman trophies, tying it with Notre Dame, Ohio State, and Oklahoma for the most by one school? And finally, we have Natasha Cloud, Washington Mystics guard. Her height is 5'10". She was born February 22, 1992, in her hometown, Broomall, Pennsylvania. Cloud led the WNBA in assists last season with an average of 7 points per game. She also averaged a career-high 10.7 points per game as the Mystics went 22-14. In the 2019 season, Cloud averaged 13.1 points and 6.2 assists as Washington won its first league title. But did you know Cloud opted out of the 2020 WNBA season so she could devote her time to campaigning for social justice, including helping to plan a Juneteenth demonstration in Washington? Good job, Natasha. Continuing with July birthdays, on the 2nd of July, Los Angeles Sparks power forward Nika Ogwumike turns 33. Chicago Cubs starting pitcher Justin Steele is 28 on the 11th of July. On the 17th of July, hockey prospect Connor Bedard celebrates turning 18. On the 19th of July, San Francisco 49ers all-pro tackle Trent Williams turns 35. In tennis, Novak by the numbers. In June, Novak Djokovic won the French Open. That's him in the photo above. It's understandable that he celebrated by lying down. The guy has to be exhausted. The win gave him 23 men's Grand Slam titles, breaking his tie with Rafael Nadal. I knew that going into the tournament that there is history on the line, but I try to focus my attention and my thoughts into preparing for this match in the best way possible to win like any other match, Djokovic said after beating Casper Ruud in the final. Of course, I would lie if I say that I didn't think about the finish line that is right there and that one more match is needed to win a trophy, a historic one. Djokovic has won the Australian Open 10 times and the French Open 3 times. He's captured 7 Wimbledon titles and has won the United States Open 3 times. In those 23 Grand Slams, he has played an astonishing 30,001 points, and he's won 16,829 of them. That's 56.1%. When it comes to games, he's won 62.7%, or 3,247 out of 5,176. Even more impressive, in his Grand Slam victories, Djokovic has lost just 76 sets while winning 475. How does the Joker do it? Well, it helps to have a blistering accurate serve. In his wins, he has had 1,243 aces and just 352 double faults. And what's the toll? Well, his 23 Grand Slam finals took a total 76 hours, 55 minutes, and more than 3 full days of tennis. Woohoo! Djokovic, the Joker. Question and answer, soccer, warm-up. Chloe Ricketts. On May 10th, Chloe Ricketts started her first NWSL game for the Washington Spirit in a Challenge Cup match against the Orlando Pride at the age of 15. Afterwards, she chatted with kid reporter Alani Jordan. SI, kids, with your daily schedule now that you've signed a pro contract, do you have time for socializing? Chloe, I have a lot of time for socializing. My schedule isn't too different because I was homeschooled most of last year as well. I just wake up, I go to practice, then I'd go home, complete my classes, and then I hang out with my friends after. SI, how do you keep up with your schedule for school and soccer? Chloe, the club has done a really great job in integrating me and making sure I have my schoolwork done and that I might have enough time to complete everything. SI, what is the coolest place that you've ever played soccer? Chloe, when I was 10 years old, I went to Portugal, and that was by far the coolest. SI, do you think boys' soccer leagues are more competitive than girls' soccer elite or academy leagues? Chloe, I do not think there is a real difference. I played in both, and I think playing with boys can help you develop as a female athlete because typically they play faster than girls. But in my experience, girls are more aggressive. SI, this is a new team and a brand new experience. How have you been received by your teammates? Chloe, I'm like the little sister of the team, and everyone wants me to feel welcomed and feel great, and they're doing a great job of teaching me what professional life is and just integrating me into the team. SI, is there an athlete who inspired you in your sports journey? Chloe, there's lots of athletes that have inspired me in my sports journey, but if I had to name one, I would have to say Trinity Rodman on my team. Just her work ethic alone makes me feel empowered every day, and I want to live up to what she's doing. Fast start. Since signing a pro contract in March, Ricketts has become a fan favorite in Washington. Dinger Delight by Mark Beckel. Major League players are celebrating home runs like never before, and everyone is getting in on the act. Baseball is a game of unwritten rules. You could also say silly unwritten rules, but that's a whole other discussion. One of them has always been that celebrating a home run too much is a no-no. Many a fight is started because someone flipped the bat or spent too much time admiring a tater. But things have changed, at least so long as the celebration takes place in the dugout. Teams are coming up with elaborate rituals for when a player goes yard. The Pirates, for example, give the slugger a cutlass to brandish. The Orioles let the player drink water from the homer hose, something most of them did as kids when they were playing in the yard. The Red Sox give the home run hitter a set of giant inflatable dumbbell weights. The Twins pretend to go fishing. Surprisingly, many of the celebrations on display were orchestrated by pitchers. We've got a lot more time on our hands than the position players do, Orioles reliever Keegan Aiken says. I think that's how all those ideas came about. Consider the Reds. Louis Sissa began thinking about the topic last year when he moved from the bullpen to the starting rotation, which meant he'd be spending a lot more time in the dugout. He was struck by outfielder Jake Frelick, who sports a beard and long blonde hair. Sissa was reminded of a Viking, so began working on a Norse-themed celebration. He ordered a metal helmet online, but it proved to be a little dangerous. It was pretty sick, second baseman Jonathan India says, but it was real heavy. It could have cut some people in the face. So Sessa found a plastic replacement, and the team honed in celebration in spring training. When a hitter goes yard, he is adorned with a hat and a cape, and after significant homers, his teammates pretend to row a boat behind him. The trend shows no signs of letting up. It's great, says Andrew McCutcheon of the Pirates, who became the first player to wield the team's home run cutlass in April. You've got to find a way to have fun and celebrate the small things as much as you can. American Heroes, World Cup 2023. The United States enters the World Cup with it. Intriguing mix of established veterans and fresh young talent. But will the team gel in time? After the winning the last two Women's World Cups, the United States will certainly head to Australia and New Zealand for the 2023 competition as the hands-down favorite, right? I mean, they're still ranked number one in the world, so they'll be unstoppable, right? Right? Well, since the last World Cup in 2019, a lot has changed. Many of the players who made up the iconic core that led the team to those two wins have been injured or have moved on. So has Coach Jill Ellis, replaced by Vlatko Adanovsky. At the Olympics in 2021, the team failed to reach the final, settling for bronze. Last fall, the United States lost three games in a row for the first time in nearly 30 years. Just when things started looking better following a win in the SheBa Leagues Cup in February, star Mallory Swanson was lost with a knee injury in an April friendly. That's not to say that the United States is heading into the tournament in bad shape, just different. For years, United States soccer focused on winning now, which meant focusing on veteran players. I don't even think that the national team was set up for helping young players, Adanovsky says. So after taking the job in late 2019, he set about trying to develop young talent with an eye toward the future. Now, about half of the players he'll be taking down under are making their World Cup debuts. Not everything is new, though. There will still be familiar faces. Outspoken star Megan Rapinoe is still around. Becky Sauerbrunn is still a rock on defense. Rose Lavelle is looking to build on her breakout performance as the 2019 Cup. Alex Morgan is still scoring goals, only now she's doing it alongside players who grew up with her poster on their walls. Morgan is iconic, gushes forward Naomi Girma, the top pick of the 2022 NWSL draft. It's crazy to get to play with her. We're all just coming at it open and trying to learn. And I think at the same time, bringing our own personalities and energy, and I think it's a good energy that we all will feed off. And I think it's a good balance of, like, you have the veterans who bring established leadership, and we're kind of learning from them. But then also, like, they'll joke around with us. I think it's a good vibe. It's also one that will benefit not only the United States team, but future squads as well. Adanovsky has liked what he's seen in the interaction between the vets and the kids, and he hopes the youngsters will remember what they're learning 5 or 10 years from now. The players on this team, they're nasty competitors, says Adanovsky, and nasty is in a good way. It's passed on generation to generation. I'm glad that now the next group is picking that up, because they're going to have to pass that on. Alex Morgan, old guard. Trinity Rodman, young gun. Things have been hectic for Morgan recently. She spent 6 years battling with United States soccer for equal pay and equal treatment. 3 years ago, she had her first child, a daughter named Charlie. With a new sense of purpose and a fresh perspective, Morgan has found her place supercharged, and that's bad news for the rest of the world. Morgan has scored 121 goals in the 13 years since she earned her first cap, and now her game is more well-rounded than ever. She used to rely on her speed, but now the 34-year-old is more patient, drawing on her vision and awareness to get her teammates more involved, and she attributes that to dealing with the changes in her life. "I am just as hungry for more as I was 5 or 10 years ago," she says, "but I don't necessarily feel the pressures that I felt then." If anyone is worried about the fact that Rodman has no World Cup experience, consider how well she adapted in her first match with the Washington Spirit. After becoming the youngest player drafted second in 2021 in the history of the NWSL, she saw her first action in a Challenge Cup match and promptly scored within 5 minutes. With two full professional seasons under her belt, Rodman has blossomed into an all-round star. In her brief NWSL career, she had 14 goals and 9 assists in just 51 games. And it's not as if she doesn't have any international experience. The 21-year-old forward, who will play a big part in filling the hole left by Mallory Swanson's injury, has 17 caps and 2 goals. In 2020, she found the net 9 times at the Under-20 World Cup, helping the United States to its 6th win in that tournament. Becky Sauerbrunn, KG Vet, and Sophia Smith, fresh face. Her first stint as captain of the USWNT did not go well. Sauerbrunn will be the first to admit that. Appointed in 2016, the introverted Sauerbrunn assumed that her new duty required her to be a rah-rah leader. She spent the better part of 2 years trying to be something she wasn't, and ultimately ended up losing the captain's armband. Now she's got it back, and the 38-year-old has learned from her mistakes. "I feel way more settled in who I am and in my leadership style because of the failures that had that first go round," says Sauerbrunn. She's happy to let other players give pep talks, focusing instead on creating a welcoming culture. On the field, she's not flashy either. Sauerbrunn has never scored a goal in 2016 appearances, but she anchors a defense that is routinely among the best in the world. So Sophia Smith, fresh face. Few players in the world are more dangerous with the ball at their feet than Smith. The forward, who will be 22 at the start of the World Cup, loves to run right at defenders and either shoot or pick out an open teammate. "The field gets small for her very quickly," her former club coach Ryan Wilkinson of the Portland Thorns said last year. "You give her a sniff at the net, and she makes something out of nothing." Here's what she's conjured up so far. A total of 12 goals in 29 games for the USWNT, plus the game-winning goal in the 2022 NWSL Championship game. That culminated the season in which Smith was named the league MVP. She celebrated that title-winning goal with a simple shrug, a la NBA legend Michael Jordan. It was as if she was saying the goal was just something that came naturally to her, because it was. Continuing with players, number 5. These stars from all over the world will also be shining this summer as they look to thrive on the sport's biggest stage. To watch. Number 1, Merle Franz from Germany. If there's one thing to expect from Franz, Germany's stellar goalkeeper, is that she will be hungry. In the past year, she's suffered agonizing defeats in the finals of last summer's European Championship and this year's Champions League with Wolfsburg. Number 2, Asisat Oala, Nigeria. A 5-time winner of the African Women's Footballer of the Year Award, Oshoala netted 21 times in 28 games for the Barcelona this year. Only one African team has made the quarterfinals of the Women's World Cup. The elite goal scorer makes the Super Falcons a threat to be the second. Number five, Wendy Renard of France. One of the top defenders in the game, Captain Renard left the French team in February in protest of coach Corinne Diacre. Shortly thereafter, Diacre was replaced and Renard returned. Now she's expected to anchor the back line for a deep squad that is ranked number five in the world. Number four, Sam Kerr, Australia. There's no doubt that Kerr is graceful. The striker is one of the most technically proficient players in the world. But don't think that means she's not tough. Kerr, who has scored 63 goals in 120 cups, grew up playing Australian rules football. Her dad and brother played professionally. And number five, Alexia Putellas, Spain. When Lionel Messi left Barcelona, the player who replaced him as the face of the club was not a man. It was Putellas, the midfielder dynamo who has won the last two Ballon d'Or feminine awards as the best women's player in the world. As she's fully recovered from an ACL injury, Spain will be tough to beat. Games to watch. The United States has been the best team in the CONCACAF region since, well, forever. But Canada is catching up fast. The neighbors of the North won gold at the Olympics in 2021 and feature, like the United States, an intriguing mix of old and new. A host of exciting young players are joined by forward Christine Sinclair, who has scored more international goals, 190, than any player in the history. Sonia Leon, a 30-year-old forward, scored three goals in two friendlies against Australia last fall. The games were hard-fought and wildly entertaining. With a home crowd behind them, the Sheilas will be tough to take down. This game will probably decide the group. It'll likely be one of the most entertaining group stage affairs. Number two, USA versus the Netherlands, Group July 27th, Group E. What's the reward for entering the tournament as the number one team in the world? For the United States, it's a matchup with the team it faced in the 2019 World Cup final. The Dutch will sadly be missing top scorer Vivian Miedema, who tore her ACL. Number three, Norway versus New Zealand. The stadium will be rocking when the co-hosts, the Football Ferns, take on traditional power Norway in the tournament opener. A favorable draw means if New Zealand can grab a point here, it could well get to the knockout stage for the first time. England versus Denmark, Group D, July 28th. Riding high after their win in last summer's European Championships, the three Lionesses will be one of the teams to beat. The Denmark will be a challenge. Pernille Harder is a two-time UEFA Player of the Year. And number five, Brazil versus Jamaica. Group F, August 2nd. Brazil is known for flair, but the Selecao might well meet their match in Jamaica. Forward Khadijah Shaw, her love of carrots earned her the nickname Bunny. It's on the back of her Man City jersey. And she scored a staggering 55 goals and 38 cups. H.I. Tizuni, the Cubs mascot, is a, just facts to know, is a 15-year-old football and mad penguin with blue hair. She's a Uptula minor, also known as Little Penguin. Her name is Tizani, which is a mashup of Tasman Sea, her home, and the world unity, an important theme of the event. Home talent. The tournament will spotlight several indigenous players, the people who lived in Australia and now New Zealand before colonists arrived. Among them is Aussie player Lydia Williams, who has written two kid books about a young Indigenous player. Most hosts. The first 32-team Women's World Cup will be held at 10 stadiums in Australia and New Zealand. The opening match will take place at historic Eden Park, which opened 123 years ago and thus also hosted games in the Cricket and Rugby World Cups. Watch this. When the United States won the first Women's World Cup in 1991 above, the final aired in a small regional channel that no longer exists. This summer, organizing are looking at a slightly larger audience. About 2 billion people are expected to watch worldwide. Fan focus. The Netherlands' first game is in Dunedin, New Zealand, which means fans have to trek more than 11,000 miles from home. Nonetheless, expect strong rooting sections from all over the world. Fans from more than 100 companies have purchased tickets. Will you be there? A quick look at end zone. What's the call? Wrong rim. Buzz Becketers were playing Whitney's Winners in a basketball game at the SI Kids Treehouse. Whitney passed the ball to Kip, who fires up a three-pointer that missed the basket entirely. As Buzz leaped for the defensive rebound, he accidentally tips the ball into the basket. Whitney claims her team should get 3 points since the ball was shot from behind the arc and never touched the ground or the hoop. A red-faced Buzz argues that she should get only 2 points. What's the call? Answer? Whitney's team gets only 2 points since Buzz was inside the three-point arc when he tipped the ball into the basket. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.